You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Curtain up, theater people, and welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket. My name is Sean Chandler, and I'll be your host. Your Program Is Your Ticket is a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. As many of you know, Your Program Is Your Ticket is a helpful system where your program is literally your ticket to get into the theater in smaller, more intimate productions. It's these works we like to highlight, and it's our goal on this show to feature as many of these productions as possible while still discussing the biggies. My guests on today's show are the mega-talented team from Group.br, whose mission is to present Brazilian culture through the performing arts. They're here to talk with me about their show, Inside the Wild Heart, an immersive theatrical experience based on the works of Clarice Lispector, Brazil's most acclaimed female writer. The critically lauded Inside the Wild Heart, presented in New York in 2016 and then again in 2018, transported the audience directly inside Lispector's heart, creating an experience that encouraged them to engage with literature on a sensory level. Now, these great artists were interviewed at a different time to accommodate schedules, so you may hear differences in audio here and there. Not that that takes away from their incredible personalities. I'm just letting you know up front, just in case things sound a little different from what you're hearing right now. So let's bring them on. Hi, Group.br, and welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket.
Hello.
Hi. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
I know you're having like a really busy week this week.
Tell me about it.
Opening week in a new platform. It's a new world. It's like everything is new. So it's exciting, but it's also nerve-wracking.
Yes. Well, sure. Absolutely. Let's start by having you both introduce yourselves and telling us your position in Group.br.
So I'm Andressa Furletti, co-founder and artistic director of Group.br. I'm also a multidisciplinary artist from Brazil, living in New York for 13 years now.
Cool.
And I'm Deborah Ballartini. I'm the executive director and co-founder of Group.br. I am an actress, director. I do performing arts as well. And I've been living in New York for the past 26 years.
Cool. Well, you both have a lot more New York experience than I. I've only been living here for 4 or 5.5 years now. But I moved from Los Angeles.
I'll give you some advice. Oh.
Try to get rent control if you can.
Yes, definitely.
I think that ship has sailed for us. So. By the way, I love your names. I think you both have the coolest names.
Thank you.
They're so lyrical and they just have such a nice, you know, lilt to them that just hits the ear really, really well.
So thank you.
Just wanted to let you know. Please tell our audience what Group.br stands for and give us a little history of the company.
Okay. So
I'll let Andressa talk because I'm very famous for talking a lot. We'll be here for 2 hours.
She wants to tell all the details. And I go like, Deborah, straight to the point, my friend. Not a 5-hour podcast. So Group.br is still the only Brazilian theater company in New York. We founded it in 2011 with a reading of a play. It was like a very shy encounter of 10 actors that wanted to do something Brazilian here, not even know exactly what. And then after this reading, it was clear who were the people that wanted to stick together and wanted to actually create a company and keep bringing Brazilian culture through performing arts to New York. This is something that was very important for us at that time. It still is, but at a time, there was absolutely no representation of Brazilian theater in New York. Theater scene, and we thought that wasn't fair because Brazilian culture is so rich and it's so vast, and there's like a lot of other Latin companies, but they're mostly focused on Hispanic countries and Spanish. So we wanted to bring this flavor of Brazil. So this small reading became a production of a play of Brazil's biggest writer called Nelson Rodrigues. The play was called The Serpent.
This is your first project, right?
Yeah, this was the first project we did just for a weekend, all in Portuguese with English subtitles. And for our surprise, it was sold out and people were very happy about it. Some Brazilians were crying because they saw Nelson Rodrigues in New York, you know, they were very emotional. And then we decided to keep going. So right from the beginning, it was me, Deborah, and Tiago Felix. We all got together through a friend in common called Carlos Caldart. He actually wasn't in the first production of The Serpent. He thought that we were too out there, too out of the box. He was like, nah, I want something more simple, just a black box and a chair. And we want to like a window that spins in the so it was the three of us. We did this performance. And then next we create our first devised work called Infinite While It Lasts. It was based on the life and works of Vinicius de Moraes. And this name might not ring the bell for people right away, but everyone knows him because he's one of the creators of Bossa Nova. He composed Girl from Ipanema, No More Blues, and all those most of the Bossa Nova songs you hear in restaurants.
I love Bossa Nova music.
Yeah. So you would love that show. That show happened in the bar. An audience would come in and have the, because like Vinicius was very bohemic and he got married 9 times. And he was actually deep in love with all 9 women. So we did this show in a bar, telling 9 love stories through his poetry and his music. So people would come in and it was a band playing Bossa Nova and then all the actors were playing Vinicius, talking to the audience. And then we would start the show. I played a character that was Vinicius' death, because Vinicius was very aware of mortality and the ending of things. And that's why his like most famous poem has this line, let it not be immortal because it's flame, but let it be infinite while it lasts. So there was always like very, very intense. But it ends, and if it ends, you got to end it. So he had this conversation with death all the time. So it was like all actors playing either Vinicius or one of Vinicius' wives. And the way it worked, the essence of Vinicius would pass from one actor to another. So sometimes an actress would be playing Vinicius, but she was not playing a man. She was like an actress embodying that essence, you know, embodying all that love, all that poetry, all that music. So we did that show in 2013 and 2014. Then 2015, we were like, what we do now? And we started to study. And Clarice Lispector was one of the subjects we were interested in. She is one of Brazil's biggest writers, is definitely the biggest female writer. She's also considered the greatest female Jewish writer after Kafka in the world. So we started to look at her story and her works that, you know, usually Brazilians read in school when they're teenagers, and it's too, like, way too deep for teenagers. You like it, but you don't really like understand it, you know, the depth of it. And then when we look into it, she was an immigrant. She was a refugee. Her family was a refugee. They escaped the Jewish persecution in Ukraine at the time. It's called the pogroms. End up in Brazil in the Northeast, had a like huge, like it's a long story. We can talk more if you want to hear more about her. And then we thought, well, she's an immigrant. She's a refugee. She's a woman. She was way ahead of her time. We need to talk about her, and the work is amazing. So in 2015, we digged into her works, and it was like a happy coincidence that later that year, New Directions Publishing published the complete stories translated to English. And it was like really, really good translation, because it's not easy to translate Clarice. Translations are always complicated, but Clarice has such a specific voice, such a specific way of constructing the phrases. So Katrina Dotson did an amazing job, and this book was in the list of the recommended books in the New York Times. So that really helped open an audience for Clarice here, and we were like, ah, this is amazing.
That's a nice plug.
Yes, right?
For sure.
And then, like, for Vinicius, we created the show in, like, maybe 8 months we had the show, but Clarice was way more complicated. Because her work, it's very diverse. Vinicius was very straightforward. Like 98% of his work is about love, either falling in love or falling out of love. So it was really easy to find a thread, you know. We took a while to like find like how we would going to tell those stories. And sometimes he would like meet a future wife when he was still married, like 20 years before, you know, it's like, so making these connections. But Clarice, she has a variety of recurrent themes. Then we were like, okay, so the most important is freedom with identity. No, it's time. No, it's faith. No, it's violence. No, it's love. You know, we started to see some themes that were recurrent. And right from the beginning, we wanted this show to happen in the house and to be very intimate and very close, because that's the feeling of her work. It really feels that someone is sitting next to you and just whispering those very deep feelings in your ear that you go like, how do you know that? I also feel that, you know.
Andressa, before you dig into the show, I think that I'd like to go to the timeline a little bit, because this was, we had to do two productions, like the first one on the 2016, which we thought we could have done it in 8 months like we did Vinicius. But actually, like Andressa just said, no, we couldn't do that because we start, you know, finding those intrinsic little things that Clarice had. So we had to create a system. So the first production in 2016 was, it was very nice. It was interesting. We had a director from Brazil called Regina Miranda. She's amazing. She met Clarice, you know, she was very, very nice. But then when 2017 hit, we were like, we need a little bit more, you know, like something is missing. So that's when we came back. We took 2017 to do more research and, you know, put the play the way we, in a different way. Like we had to create a system. And that system is what Andressa is about to talk about, or we can talk about it together, but we found all these themes recurrent in the books. So here we are. We already read like nine of her novels, and the short stories, and we see these recurrent themes: love, solitude, violence, her questions about God and religion, freedom. What is freedom and things like that. So we narrowed it down to 11 themes, basically. And we got to the conclusion that we had to had 11 actors or performers, right? 10 being actors and then one musician, because music was also a recurrent theme and very important for Clarice. So we ended up with 11 plays, basically.
Like 11 vignettes, if you will.
No, they're
no 11 plays, 11 two-hour plays.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Because so basically each actor, it got very complicated, but it's beautiful.
I'm sure.
So if you have, for example, Andressa, she took care of the freedom theme, right? I took care of God theme. So each one of us have a script for 2 hours. And those scripts, they all happen simultaneously. So while I'm doing my play inside the house, questioning about God and going throughout the whole body of work, Andressa is doing the same, but talking about freedom. And that's a very important point, not just because of the systematic way that we found, the system that we found, but also because you can really go inside the wild heart. And that's the name of the show. Her first book was called Near the Wild Heart. So we took that and made Inside the Wild Heart. So when you get into this house, you are encountered with the characters. You're not necessarily going to find Clarice sitting in a chair or with a typewriter in her lap and talking about her stories. No, you see the characters. So the minute you walk in through into the house, you see the wild heart of Clarice, the wild head of Clarice, basically. And the first thing that the audience see in front of them is a question. If you were you, how would it be and what would you do? That's a sentence that Clarice, one of her quotes.
And that's the And that's also the first.
What is that, Andressa?
That's the first text they hear. So the idea is that they follow this question. Because each audience member can create their own journey. It's very interesting because in the beginning you see them going here and there looking like, oh, where it's happening, and it's happening everywhere. And there's this like anxiety of like, I'm watching this, but I'm missing something else. And you always miss something else. But then you see them kind of relaxing and it's like, okay, I'm just going to, follow my instincts and see where I want to go, what I want to do, if I want to interact with the performers or not.
And also like when they, after they pass that question, right, they see that question written down. One or two rooms, like they keep walking in, they see the next sentence, which is getting lost is also a way. And that's when they kind of relax a little bit and they go like, oh, okay, so I can get lost in this place. And it's also a way to see it. So we give those two hints to the audience, already from Clarice, so they can, enjoy what they are doing.
How subliminal. I love when theater artists create a psychology within the audience. Like when you're watching the show or if you're watching a film where the audience is, you're engaging their minds and they don't necessarily know what you're doing, but you're doing it. So that's really cool. I love that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. It's interesting that you say psychology, because our director, Linda Wise, which is a longtime collaborator of ours, she's from Paris. She's originally from South Africa, but she is radicated in Paris. She says that. She says theater without psychology is not theater for her. So in everything, instinctually, like from Andressa and I, we always have that element, you know, of instigating, mm-hmm. of like questioning. And Clarice is a big, you know, she says of herself, she said of herself, I am a question. And so we took those hints, you know, to use that into the play. So I love that you say psychology. It's very important.
Let me just backtrack very quick, because you were talking about the rework of the play, but then we did just finish the story, and then in 2018, we reopened the play in a big house, like three-story house in Manhattan, and that show was directed from Linda Wise, that Deborah just mentioned. So people in the podcast, you can't see it, but Sean can see a picture behind me. This is like the set of the show, and this is the only time you see Clarice here in this TV, because it was her only TV interview that was playing on this TV, so then people could see her.
Well, I thought that's what you were exhibiting there. I thought you were exhibiting her. That's really cool.
Yeah, wow. and just to complement what you were saying about the psychology. Like all these ideas was really like given by Clarice, you know, like the thing, like linearity, it's not the most important thing in her books. Telling a story is not the most important thing. She's always like looking for something, always digging in, you know, she's always like have those burning questions that just have no answer. So that's the feeling we want in the show, you know, that you can just witness a scene and get something out of it. You don't really need to understand like the whole story, because that little part will give you something, will give you a feeling. She always says like, actually her biographer says, you don't read it with your mind, you read it with your belly. With your body, you feel it, you know.
Mm-hmm. and also, Clarice, reading Clarice is witchcraft. I love that one.
People say that, yeah.
Yeah, people say it's witchcraft, it's not literature.
So some people call her writings witchcraft, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's really interesting. Now, I know that you wrote individual plays. But I would assume that you also held yourself responsible for having a sort of a macro arc going on throughout the whole experience. So you had to pay attention to how does this play and this character relate to this play and this character. That was probably, I mean, if it were me, I would like need to have like, I have to like utilize PowerPoint or like get a big white marker board and keep track of all of that.
That's exactly what we did.
Yeah, we had this huge pieces of paper, and then it was like from macro to micro. So we had this, I call it a chart, because it was like first 15 minutes of the show. So this character is here, this character is here, and this character is doing this, this character is doing that. And from this character is going to transform to that character, blah, 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 blah. So that was like a little square for every 10 to 15 minutes. That was like those blocks when we have like a sound cue to move to the next, chapter, how we call it. And then each one of those individual squares was on a drive on each individual script.
Column.
So that little column also lived on the drive. And it started with this big paper with like pieces of paper, name of the character or and the scene and the page on the book, so we could go. And the way we worked, we would read the book, get like mark it, whatever like stands out
individually,
and then we would get together, compare those marks, and it's like, oh yes, no, I marked the same. Like, it was really funny how we highlighted most of the same things. But sometimes one would go like, yeah, but look at this. This image is great. Oh, look at this. This is a costume. Oh, this is an installation, you know. It was all like mining, you know, her work.
Yeah, I would say that like for 1 year, those little pieces of paper had like duct tape in the back. So we would like sleep on for like a week thinking about that character in that slot. For a year, we've been changing and putting this character in different places. But the structure of the whole thing, like Andres is saying, is that we did a chronological arc of her work. So we start with the first book and we end with the two last books. So there is one part, because what is really beautiful about Clarice is that she starts already in a very different way of writing. When she was 23, she won her first award, you know, for best book in Brazil. So she starts with this book, and then you can see how she evolves throughout the whole body of work. And the reason I'm saying this is because there is a climax in the play for one of her books, which is called Agua Viva. And there's no translation for that, but it's like jellyfish. That would be jellyfish. But
live water.
I was gonna, it sounds like a brand of water in a way. But,
yeah, it's live water, but it's Agua Viva. And Agua Viva, she really goes into this stream of consciousness, like very close to what James Joyce would do, you know. But it's extremely powerful. So that's a very big climax of words and monologues. That's when you really see, you know, the first floor, we had the guy doing a text in rap mode and going crazy and sweating. I'm on the second floor inside of a fire burning because, you know, she had an accident. Clarice had an accident. Like, she basically set herself on fire because she forgot the cigarette on, and she took some sleeping pills, and it was just crazy. So I'm in the fire. On the third floor, something else is happening. So that's like the moment of like turmoil of her words, you know, spitting it out and all that. But what is interesting is that in Agua Viva, she specifically says, I can't find words anymore. Oh, the only thing that is left for me is to bark at God. I love that. I love that. That she, there was so much inside of her that she could not really say it anymore. There were no words for her anymore. So she makes this book almost she calls it a jazz, you know, it's a piece of jazz. It's an improvisation on everything.
Musical jazz.
So yeah, it musical jazz, right. as music. And she loved music. So in response to your, you know, to your question about this arc, that's how we did it. And then the last part, like the last two books that she wrote, they were published almost at the same time. And I believe that The Hour of the Star was after her death, right, Andres? Or a week before she died or something like that?
No, it was before she died. And then The Breath of Life.
Breath of Life. Yeah, Breath of Life came after. But they were being written at the same time, which is a little bit more... I don't know. I don't know how to explain. I don't want to say mellow because it's not mellow. It's very intense as well. But I think that Agua Viva gives that climax into the whole arc of the story for her literature.
Wow. What was she like as a person?
She was very reserved, very intense. She was married to a diplomat for like 20-something years, and she hated the diplomatic life. She hated the parties. She hated the people. She thought that no one could understand her. She was way too crazy for them. So she didn't have many friends, but had like big friends. She had two sons. She got divorced after like 20 something years of marriage and came back to Brazil by herself with two sons. One was, schizophrenic, so it really wasn't easy for her. She worked a lot from home and, you know, with two kids. Now with the pandemic, a lot of people understand that.
Yeah, indeed.
Especially with one son with mental health, that definitely wasn't easy for her. So she was like very reserved, and it was hard because it was a time that divorce wasn't even legal. So it was hard for her because that was like the 60s, the 50s, right? So you imagine like the women that were married could not hang out with her because she wasn't good company. You know, she was good, wasn't good example of the wife and the woman, society expected her to be. And also the man was kind of like, groups of men and sometimes a woman. So she was very lonely, person in a way that like very reserved. Stay a lot at home. She worked a lot from home, took care of her kids. And very, very intense. Anything else, Deborah? You want to?
She died at 56, right? In 1977?
Almost 57, because it was like exactly one day before her birthday.
Oh, wow. Yeah. But that was in 1977 when she died.
Yes, yes. I would say that all of it, that, you know, everything that you just said it, but it was really hard for me. It was very interesting when we were researching her. It was very interesting to me to find a picture of Clarice smiling. Hmm. I thought that was a very good, that was a very intriguing thing for me.
I can believe that from what you said. I can, yeah.
There's one book of her, a photobiography of hers, and it's beautiful, like pictures and pictures and pictures and pictures. And finally, we found one that she's holding her oldest son, and there's a little, you know, a little smile in there. And I was like, yes, this is beautiful. I never met the woman, so of course we didn't see her, you know, in a daily basis to say she didn't smile. But in the public life, it was really hard to find a picture of her like that. But then I started thinking, like, oh my God, all this existential thing, you know, sort of Kafka, sort of Joyce, sort of all this. Where is the humor in Clarice?
Yeah.
So through her personality, you know, through what we knew of her personality and reading the biography and all that and reading the text, I started like being obsessed about where is the humor? Where is the humor? Like, we need some humor. And amazingly enough, when you read it, it is existential, but it is funny at points. There are things that you laugh about and you go like, wow, this was so smart. And she's very quotidian as well. You know, she's always starts her short stories, her books, you know, in the house, in the kitchen, you know, cooking or anything like that. And or going to the park and going to, you know, have a bag of groceries. And then suddenly this character has an epiphany, and inside that epiphany, you know, the questioning and the existential thing, there's always like a little hint of humor. Like, it's almost like she's looking at us and saying, isn't that funny how you also think that? And so it's very intimate, you know. You have to put the book aside sometimes and say, like, wait a minute, you touched on something here that I didn't want to hear. Let me go think about this. And then, of course, you leave the book in there and you go to wash, you know, wash the dishes and you're like, oh, damn it, I can't stop thinking about this. This is my own epiphany.
You know, you mentioned something really interesting, because one of my favorite things to do, and it drives my husband crazy, we'll go to like antique stores or something like that. And I love it when I find like an old photo album of people that I don't know. And I love going through them and just sort of saying, what is this person like? And you'll go through and you'll see the same person just, you know, kind of with a frown on their face. And finally there's something that makes them smile.
Yeah.
And it's triggering emotionally to me. So I totally get what you're saying when you finally saw her smile, you know, holding her child. So that's, and just to add,
there's some interviews with close friends that actually say that she was funny and she used to laugh and tell jokes, but she did not like smiling in pictures at all. So there's, I think that also adds to that mystery. There is really not much videos and audio from her. I went to this Museum of Sound and Image in Rio to hear this interview she gave to a radio station. And that was like very revealing to see her like making little jokes and laughing all the time and making fun of herself and making fun of the world, you know, like...
being a real person.
Yeah, because like this interview on TV, this one that is here that is also in the play, it was something very last minute. She popped up in this TV station and then someone said, Clarice, don't you want to give us an interview? She was like, okay, I agree, but only if you air after I'm dead. And it was like 30 minutes before the next show that was live, there was no studio. So it's like this very weird interview with this one chair in this empty studio and no preparation. And then in this interview, she says all the time that she's tired, you know, like it really wasn't her good day. And it's really sad that this is the image that keeps in people's minds because it's the only video we have available. So it gives the people the idea that she's a bit more somber than she actually was, according to her friends. And she gave this interview in 77. We don't know if she knew already she had cancer. I have a feeling that she knew and didn't tell anyone, but according to the biography, she didn't know. And that what gives me that hint, it's like right at the end, they ask her about like when she's not writing, what happens? And she says, when I'm not writing, I'm dead. You know, like life is unbearable when I'm not writing, blah, blah, blah. And then at the very last, she says, well, now I'm dead. I'm speaking to you from my tomb. And then she gives like a little smirk. Because she asked this interview to air only after her death. So she's really speaking from her tomb.
So she has the last laugh in a way.
Yes, like very subtle. It's like it's when the video is already fading, but you see like corner of her mouth go like, I'm really smart. I'm actually speaking from my tomb because it can only air after my death.
What's interesting is I feel like she's probably programmed you through her writing and what very little you've seen of her to look for just the tiniest change of facial expression. Like she probably does. I bet she has probably the same facial expression most of the time in everything you see.
Yeah.
And so she's created a psychology in you.
Yes.
Yeah. To she's like, I want everyone to think I'm, you know, I want them to wonder about me. And that's really cool. Let's go back to talking about Inside the Wild Heart. Now, you have a new iteration of Inside the Wild Heart, right? And it's actually starting on November 27th. So tell us about that.
Yes. So like so this year marks the centennial of Clarice Lispector. So our plans were to bring this show back to New York and then take it to Brazil as a celebration. But then pandemic hits, and then we have to change all the plans, right?
Right.
So in the beginning, a lot of people were streaming their shows. And we have like a very nice footage of this show. We had 9 cameras around the space trying to capture. We didn't capture everything, but we captured like most of the show. So from the beginning, it was like, oh, Maybe we should stream it. But how? It's like three floors happening at the same time. And it was so important, this element of the audience being able to choose whatever they see. And then we were like researching, should we open three Zoom
places? Meeting rooms, yeah.
Rooms, and people can like jump from one to another, but that's going to be chaotic. Do we live stream three videos at the same time and people jump from one YouTube to another? And I'm like, we couldn't find this. And we started to do this event called Happy Hour Online with readings and conversation about Clarice every Wednesday. And we kept looking. And then we got invited to be part of this event, like online event called This Immersive Globe, just about immersive theater from all over the world. Mm-hmm. They actually had a presentation, one event last year in San Francisco called, now I'm confusing the names. This Immersive Globe was this year. Immersive Summit was the name of the event last year. And I went there and, you know, like some people there has seen the show and everything. And then they had this event called This Immersive Globe in this platform called Gather Town. And how it works, like it looks kind of a video game that opens in your browser. It works on Chrome or Firefox. So if you have those browsers, you don't even have to install anything.
Just to clarify, does it work on Safari for the Apple products or just Chrome and Firefox?
Just Chrome and Firefox.
Okay, because you can always get, like, I have an Apple computer and I can get Chrome very easily.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay, cool. Good to know.
And then once you enter, you get a little avatar and you're throwing this virtual space. And you also have like a little, your camera's on if you choose so. And the way it works, when your avatar gets close to other avatar, you see their video and you hear the sound. And we were like, this is interesting. And you can set up some elements to open whatever you program them to be. So they can open a YouTube video, they can open a Vimeo, they can open a picture, they can open a Google Docs, you know, like this, a whiteboard, there's a lot of options, a Zoom meeting. So we were like, this is really interesting. So I got in touch with them and I found out that they have this option of synchronizing the elements, the video elements. So they all start at the same time. So we can have the videos of the three rooms playing at the same time. And then I created three levels of this this virtual space. So you take your avatar, you go to the first floor. When you get close to the element, you see on the bottom of the page saying press X to interact or to watch or to do whatever. And then it opens a video. So that video is already it's already playing. So you see how much you want, and then you decide, oh, I'm going to check it out what's happening on the second floor. And then you take your avatar to the second floor, and there's another video playing there. Or you can go to the third floor. Or you can decide to watch Clarice's interview. Or you can decide to see a video that was playing one of the installations. Or you can decide to leave your message on our tree of the secret desires. Or you can draw something somewhere, you know. So, of course, it's not the real thing. It doesn't have the smells and the taste, because in the play we serve coffee and cheese bread and brigadeiro, which are like two Brazilian delicacies that we do during the play. So all that stuff, and it's, you know, it's not face to face. But still, it's fun. I'm super excited about it. And people can, again, choose what to see and create their own journey. And they can come back and watch many times and have a different experience.
I am totally nerding out right now. I think that sounds so cool and so fun. And what's great about it is necessarily know this verbatim, but there's a quote by Greer Garson who said, if the boat isn't coming to you, swim out to the boat. And this is just such a great way to reach audiences that would maybe not necessarily be as engaged in theater, but you put like this video experience in front of them and they will do, they'll do all of it. They'll love it. They'll learn so much about her. I just think this is like totally neat. I do. Wow. I mean, I read your PR package and I was like, oh, this sounds really interesting. And now that like you're all the bells and whistles and Easter eggs that you're talking about is just like, like completely fills it out. I should say,
awesome. And just one detail, Deborah, just for me to complete. So, to make the experience smooth for everyone, we decided to mute everyone upon entry. So you can only interact with other audience members through the chat box, but there will be a room for them if they want to go and talk. I don't know, maybe you saw someone that you know and you want to have a conversation about what you saw during the play, because that was possible.
Or you can go and say, hey, let's check out that room together. And
Exactly.
I should say that the play is in English with Portuguese subtitles. And we do, one of our biggest missions is to actually do the plays in Portuguese, you know, to bring the sound of the Brazilian, the Portuguese, the Brazilian Portuguese language. But for this specific play, it was not possible for us to have everything in Portuguese. So the majority of it is in English with Portuguese subtitles, you know, because we're streaming all over the world. And the parts that are in Portuguese, of course, it will be translated in English. So everybody can understand what's going on.
Yeah,
and for those who know Clarice will be able to recognize the nine novels and the short stories. So
yeah, that was very clear on your website that you wanted to make sure that translations were there. And I think that's considerate. It really is. And great, because you know, it's, If you have an American audience and the American audience can, you know, figure it out and hear the story. I mean, plus it's probably a little difficult to put subtitles up on a show like that. Subtitles, like it feels like there's an elasticity to it to where things might change from one performance to the next. So I think that's very cool.
Yeah, not just that, but also in terms of space. Can you imagine like we having to have like projections and TV in every room synchronized with the actors?
Yeah.
It just wasn't possible, but it is possible in like specific times, you know, when we have small text in Portuguese, then we had in the show projected like in the big wall. We had some like videos playing all around, and then we use that to put the translations.
Let me play a little bit with Sean's nerdiness. You know, you might be able, one of the parts that we put the translation is when this character called GH encounters the roach. So try to find that room, Sean.
Roach?
You're gonna have to try to find that roach on the floor.
Okay.
And Andressa is the roach.
I love it. It's so cool. Okay. I'm jotting down a note on your script here to find the roach.
That's one of her most famous book called The Passion According to GH, which is this woman encountering a roach. That's why she gets to be compared with Kafka, because of the Metamorphoses by Kafka.
Sure.
So she got really compared to him when she wrote that book. Yeah.
That's a nice comparison.
And if you tell the story of the book, you go like, is this a good book? But the thing is like this encounter with the roach becomes a metaphor for just about everything in this character's life. Her relationship with herself, with the maid. She even like touches about racism, because like this beautiful black woman that lived and worked in her house, that she it was invisible to this middle class visual artist in Rio de Janeiro, and then suddenly hits her. She was like, oh my God, I didn't even see her. I barely know her name, you know, and then like her whole world collapses, you know, and then the roach becomes a metaphor for God, for her mother, for her marriage, for everything, you know, like she questions pretty much the whole world and comes out of this experience totally transformed. And then we have this like thing that she, at some point she becomes the roach. So I get out of the skin of the roach and Deborah kind of like becomes.
I become the roach at some point, and a lot of good epiphanies happen. What happened in that scene?
My mind is exploding over this. I'm like, whoa.
That was like, that was one day that was super cool, Sean, that so I transformed into the roach in this room here behind me as another actress is doing another text about carnival. And there's the scene of the carnival. So if you see the carnival, you're not going to see the roach. If you see the roach, you're not going to see the carnival, or you come back and see multiple times. But then like I start becoming the roach and like not just the costume, but also the movement physically. And then I end up on the floor and Clarice says that the roach is pure seduction. So I look at the audience kind of like seducing them as a roach. And it's really funny. People don't know what to do because like this roach is winking at me.
Right.
And there was one day this one guy just got into it. And he ended up on the floor and he became a roach with me.
An audience member did?
Audience member. And it was the best because I come from the second floor rushing with this, you know, I just broke up with this other character in the scene. And I come in and when I look at it, there are two roaches. And I go like, okay, what do I do? And then when I come closer, he started like going away. I held his hand and I said, no, honey, you're going to do this with me now. You're part of the scene.
So, don't spoil what you do. Don't spoil.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
I'm not going to tell you what I do, but you have to watch the scene.
Wow, this has been so cool and so delightful. I'm so glad that you've taken a project that you have and I've said this so many times on my show, it's when we hit walls that really the genius clicks on in our brain. And so many people that I've talked to of late, I've been doing this series called Act Two Places. That's about people's reaction to COVID-19, artists and their companies. And some of the ideas that people are being forced to come up with because they don't have the same rope paths that we used to have and hopefully still will have in the very near future. But this is another on a slate of like genius ideas that I'm encountering. You couldn't do it any other way. You had to figure it out. And that's great. That's like tremendous leadership. And creativity, it's just way cool. Can I have you for like maybe five more minutes and sort of ask you a few questions about the COVID-19 crisis? How has group.br been affected by COVID-19? And how has that changed plans for the company? I know you've adjusted your show, but have you changed your mission statement or have a new direction or a temporary new direction?
Not really. Like one thing I wanted to say about this, about this moment in our lives, right? I think that artists are very blessed because we train our whole lives to improvise.
Sure.
Our whole lives, that's our training. You know, we especially in theater, because, you know, it's not recorded. You cannot edit. So you have, and I think that this times that we're living now with this pandemic, there's no editing. It is, you know, one day after the other. And we are very blessed for being trained to improvise and to, you know, act on the spot or whatever it is. Does that mean it's easy? No, it's not easy. It's not easy because, like Andressa said before, we had this whole program for, you know, 2020, and we've been preparing, and we're going to put the play up and all that. And then boom, you know, life happens. Nature decides to say, nope, we're going to take a break.
Yeah.
So we took this break to rebrand, to organize a little bit more. One thing that held us really together was the Happy Hour Online, celebrating Clarissa's centennial throughout the year. So since March, we've been doing the Happy Hour Online. We invited, we invite artists from Brazil, from here. We try to pay them, you know, a very small amount, like from donations. So we keep the money circulating in the industry. We created a, New York Brazilian, Brazilian artists fund to help artists, Brazilian artists living in United States, in the New York State, I'm sorry. So that improvisation that I was talking about before, it's been holding, and we've been trying to. So we were affected financially, especially because, you know, donations don't come as easy as they used to come, you know. But for this moment, this is what I wanted to say. I don't know if Andressa wants to add something up.
Yeah,
to that.
We were like super excited about this year. It was actually the first time we were bridging a Brazilian play to come to New York, like another production, not our production. They were actually going to play in this event at NYU, and then we were producing to bring it at the Tank.
I love the tank. Yeah.
They're amazing.
Kisses for you.
They're amazing.
You. What an institution. We love the Tank and Material for the Arts and ART. Look them up, people.
Yeah.
So we were like super excited about this. It was all something that we always wanted to do, you know, to be able to be this bridge and the support for other Brazilian productions to come. And it was supposed to be in April. So when the day that we were like sending the email announcing it, I was like, guys, I think things will shut down. And it's like, oh, no, NYU didn't cancel. No, it's not going to cancel. It's going to be fine. By April, it's going to be fine.
I was in that camp. I was totally in denial.
I was like, oh, my God. And then I was about to send the email, and then they sent us an email. Yes, it's canceled. So, like, we had to really improvise everything, and it pushed up our productions to next year and the following year. And delayed a bunch of things. But on the other hand, I think it also opened some windows, if not doors. We're now being able to reach a bigger audience in Brazil because of the happy hours. Now the happy hours are only in Portuguese. In the beginning, we did Portuguese and English. But since we had the play coming in English, I was like, okay, let's concentrate in Portuguese.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
We also have a big event happening on December 10th, which is actual the birthday of Clarice Lispector, her, you know, 100th birthday. And it starts with Deborah doing a live at 5 a.m. when Clarice used to wake up. And it goes the whole day with readings and panels. And then we're going to be showing some short films. And we'll be also showing the play, and we have a talk back with the actors. So it's going to be like a full day only one event about translation is in English. If I have time, we're going to screen some of the scenes we did in the happy hour. If I have the time, I'll do the subtitles for English speakers so they can follow that on live version.
We also have, Andressa, on that day, we also have an auction going on because we have a couple of artists that we always include artists with us, you know, visual artists. Do you have something you want to for us to do an auction? Or so we're always incorporating all these people. And also we don't do only plays, you know, the company sustains itself basically with other events as well. We have two big events. One of them is the pão de queijo brunch, which is the cheese bread brunch. And also Saravá, which we do at House of Yes every year. And those events, we cannot do it anymore because of the pandemic. So this was a big chunk of our money used to come from these events, you know, performing in there and putting up, you know, these carnival parties and June parties and bringing the Brazilian culture to the United States. We had our last big event for 600 people at House of Yes on March 1st of this year, which held us together a little bit, you know, throughout this this pandemic.
Right.
Financially has been really, really hard. As for artists.
For all of us. But that's like another way that we were affected. Of course, financially is, you know, it's a big hit. But one thing that I wanted to say, and you mentioned the ART, Andressa, I wanted to mention that we also are taking this time to, ART has a very cool program called Leadership Program. And we've been around for 9 years, and it's basically Andressa and I heading everything, right? That doesn't mean we don't have people that help us when we're doing productions or when we're doing big productions. We have a whole team, of course. But on a daily basis is basically Andressa and I heading things and trying to get a help from a friend. Can you do this for me and that for me? So we hit 9 years with great achievement for a lot of things, you know, a lot of beautiful things happened. But then we decided to talk to this leadership program at ART. So that's one of the things that we are going to be focusing on starting in January to really take the company to the next level, you know, the next level of systems, organizing, making sure that praying that we actually thankful. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving. That we thank the universe for all this stuff that has been happening, because we are very lucky. We don't have a venue, right? We don't have that burden not having a venue. We are not paying anybody right now in terms of staff, because we, you know, it's the two of us. So we might be able to survive all this, and that's something that we should be very thankful about. I wanted to mention those two things that, you know, the financial burden, but also there's this other side of like, okay, let's now put everything in the box and see what box we're going to use next and things like that.
Fabulous.
Sorry if I cut your train of thought, Andres.
It's good. Tell our audience your social media, so they know where to find you and keep up with you, where to buy tickets. If you have one location they can go, like a website or something that takes everybody everywhere else, that's usually the best thing to report on.
So the website is group.br.com. So just to clarify, like from the beginning, you said like what the .br stands for. And in Brazil, you end the websites with .br. That means that is Brazilian website. So we found this .br.com because we're Brazilian before we're .com. like the name kind of like dialogues with, you know, internet and technology. I'm like a bit of a geeky person.
So that's great. No, I love making up cool names and stuff. I think that's awesome.
And Twitter and Instagram, it's writtengroup.br, D-O-T-B-R. And on Facebook, it's the dot.
And the listeners can connect with all of your other social media through your website, correct? You have links, right?
Yes.
I was going to say your website is cool, and I love the cover art for the show. I think it's really, really interesting. I don't know who.
Oh, we didn't have a chance to talk about that cover art.
Yeah, that is an art.
Beautiful story.
Brazilian artist called Paulo Gouveia. And he painted that for one of these events, fundraising events. And we loved it so much and ended up in a play.
You know. That's kind of the way it works.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because he is actually doing the centennial prints for this art, and it's going to be available on the 10th for if people wanted to buy, if people wanted to have one. He is actually signing it, and there is a seal of 100 years of Clarice. So it's a very special edition of this art. And it when he talks about the art, is very beautiful. You get to see him talk about this art in one of our panels. How did he come up with everything, all the tattoos that Clarice has in her body? It's really, really impressive.
Yeah, he used the image of her interview, this TV interview that I mentioned. So that chair that she's sitting, you know, with the bag and the hand and everything, it really looks like the TV interview.
Wow, cool. Well, I have to say, I think that you have opened up 11 virtual doors into a new frontier. This is an idea that I have not come across yet, and I'm hearing lots and lots of ideas. And I just wish you just major broken legs. I'm really excited about seeing the show, experiencing the show. And I know that just from your energy and just from the way your minds are moving and as nimble as you're being with what we're dealing with right now, you might be inventing something completely new. And that is total and complete leadership. And I congratulate you for it. So thank you very, very much for being with us, teamgroup.br. You've been amazing guests, and I wish you, again, many broken legs for your future projects as we navigate our way to a better future for theater. You've been amazing.
Thank you so much, Sean. It means a lot to us, your words, your encouragement. When you're trying something new, you really don't know what's coming on the other side. So a little bit of encouraging, it's really welcome.
I'm not being disingenuous. I think it sounds like a totally bitchin' idea. I love it. And I'm really excited. I think your audiences will as well. And they'll be blown away by your creativity. So
I echo Andressa's words as well. And I just want to say one thing to your audience and to you, of course, that don't despair if you can't see all the rooms at once when you see the show.
Buy another ticket.
You can always come back. You can always come back and watch it again, because art and us, right, as a group, we need your support. So the more you watch the show, the more you support in the art, the more we can thank you, because we cannot do anything without our audience, the people that are out there supporting us. And special thank you to you, Sean, for having us, for giving us the outlet to talk and to express. It means a lot.
It
means a lot.
It's been completely my pleasure. You have both been delightful, and thank you both. Again.
Thank you.
And congratulations on your work. This is really important for, you know, all artists. So keep it up.
That's very sweet. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Well, ladies, I'm going to let you go. I know you're busy and you have a show to put up in a couple of days. So have a great day, and just kick butt.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, folks, the 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. Once again, a big thanks to Group.br. So innovative. And Clarice Lispector sounds like a great subject for a show. You can find more episodes of Your Program Is Your Ticket on the Broadway Podcast Network, who has honored me with a place on their incredible theater podcast platform. Broadway Podcast Network is all about creating an engaging, immersive, user-friendly experience where theater stories of all kinds can be easily found, shared, and enjoyed. Please visit them on my landing page at bpn.fm/ypiyt. Again, that's bpn.fm/ypiyt, which stands for Your Program Is Your Ticket. Isn't that fun? Your Program Is Your Ticket is also on Facebook at facebook.com, Your Program Is Your Ticket. I'm on Twitter at Program Ticket. I'm also on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Casts, Deezer, TuneIn, Listen Notes, and the UK-based theater platform, Thespey. FYI, I appreciate all good ratings, reviews, and subscriptions. It really helps with my profile, and I just totally appreciate it if you would give me one. A quick thanks to North Coast NYC, the hip-hop improv theater ensemble that does my intro and outro music. You might be hearing it right now. Folks, take a little time to visit theater websites and see what they have to offer as we transition through and out of this pandemic. Watch their content, give them all great ratings and reviews, and most importantly, donate, donate, donate. It's the best thing you can do. That's the money's there, it's fast, and they can use it right away. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And until our next show, so long, theater people, and curtain.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.